Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are bringing you another sensational show that is happening at the La Mama Theater here in New York. And joining us to talk to us about our show today, we have the playwright Catherine Fiu, the director Elena Araroz, and the performer Paola Pisi. They're here to talk to us about their show, How to Eat an Orange, which is happening May 30th through June 16th at La Mama. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting lamama.org. We are very excited to be learning more about this show and to be diving more into it. It's a fascinating tale, I can tell you that based off the press release. So let's go ahead and bring on the experts for the show. Catherine, Elena, and Paola, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
Glad to be here.
I'm excited that you're all here. I can't wait to dive into the story. I mean, when the title alone came across my email, I was like, go on, what are we doing here? And just the short blurb I received, I was like, yes, 1,000 times yes to this. So Catherine, why don't we start with you as the playwright? Can you tell us a little bit about what this show is about?
Sure. So How to Eat an Orange is a one-woman play that is about a person called Claudia Bernardi. And Claudia is somebody that I met in Belfast, Northern Ireland. She is a visual artist and an activist, and her life story is one of remarkable circumstances. And our story with, I'm collaborating with the wonderful director Elena Araoz and the incredible actress Paola Pisi. We are going to be telling this story, which we don't want to do spoiler alerts here, but what I can tell you is that I think you will be surprised by this story and the way that it unfurls, not in any a predictable order, certainly.
I love that. Now, Catherine, kind of following that up, you mentioned a little bit about like where you were at when this, or who kind of inspired the show, but what inspired you to write this show, to put this all down?
Right. So basically, I was in Belfast working on an art and peace building project with Claudia, who is a visual artist. We were thrust together as roommates. And at night, we would eat our dinner and I would do my best to make a salad. And Claudia had some very specific ideas about everything. And one is she did not like olive oil at all. And she loved vinegar. So from there, we started on our meal, and she would regale me with these stories where honestly, I was like, this is not possible. And then I thought, I laughed and said, this would make a great one woman show without any ideas that I would ever do it. I said, I have an actress in mind. Well, it turned out that a series of wonderful events led to me writing this one-woman show, which Claudia refers to as a unipersonal. In her language, it's a unipersonal. So one day I was like, Claudia, I'm going to write the unipersonal. And there you have it.
That is amazing. I love that. Elena, let me come to you as the director. How is it that you came upon this piece?
Well, I had the great fortune of working with Kat a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic, also at La Mama, a really wonderful show. And the amazing thing about Kat is that she's always investigating conflicts bigger than the everyday, conflicts bigger than just even our country. She's looking at work and people through big lenses, where they come from and what's worth fighting for and what they're fighting for. And yet she does it in this really beautiful way that helps you understand the person inside of a bigger activist agenda. And it draws you in and really makes you, as an audience or as a participant in the event, question your own self in these like really, in a way that also is optimistic, right? Even when Kat is writing about something difficult, she's always, her characters are always seeking the way forward. And so we would leave rehearsal and we would say, not only what is the way forward for the show, but what is our way forward as we deal with sometimes, you know, some pretty heavy content. And this character and this piece really excited me. My heritage is from South America. The character and the person of Claudia Bernardi is also from South America. It's much about what does it mean to live in political strife in South America. So those are things that really excited me. And the thing that Catherine always does is she writes a puzzle. I mean, literally her words are a puzzle. And so to me, it's the most exciting kind of work to create and to help make, along with a team of performers, designers, because you have to unlock the puzzle. And of course, there's no one way to unlock it, but every rehearsal is so fun because you're going, what's next? What piece goes where and how and when? And maybe we need to rethink it all of the time. And then at the end, you get to something really beautiful.
That is lovely. I love that. Now, Paola, coming to you as the performer, I want to know, we are just a little over a month away from the show opening, but what has it been like developing the piece so far?
Well, it's been a little bit of a solo process so far because we haven't officially started rehearsals, meaning I haven't been in the room yet with Kat and Elena. However, when I read the script, which came to me, by the way, through the generosity of the person who it was written for, Mercedes Herrero, who is a dear friend, a wonderful actress, just a very special person. She was unavailable and she called me and she said, Paula, I think you need to do this. So the rest is history. We talked, we had a Zoom meeting, we aligned, and here I am. But I just wanted to mention that because I think it deserves it. It's the first time I'm doing an unipersonal, like Claudia calls it. And I find the idea slightly terrifying. But that's exactly why I want to do it. I believe in challenging myself to grow as an artist, and more importantly, as a person. And this material is very close to my heart. Like Claudia, who is the force of a woman that I'm playing, I grew up under a dictatorship in Argentina, which is my country of origin. So there's so many things that resonated with me about the script. And because it will be me alone on a stage for a considerable amount of time, I didn't wait until we're together in a rehearsal room and I've been really diving into the script. And it is a gift because I was a teenager when this happened and I was young and I was naive and I wasn't really in tune with what was happening. And this gives me the opportunity to really look back and just become aware and ask myself, how could I have affected change back then, even if I was young, you know? And I think that doing it through art and through this piece is both healing and exciting and challenging, mainly because it asks a lot of questions that I think are very relevant, particularly at this time and in this country right now.
That is fantastic. I love that. Some wonderful thoughts shared. And actually, I want to snowball off of that and come back first to you, Catherine, on this. Is there a message or a thought you hope that audiences take away from How to Eat an Orange?
I don't write plays with messages. I have no, I'm a storyteller, and I hope that my plays are prismatic. By that, I mean like a prism, PRISM, and that, you know, they cast lights out in different directions for different audience members. You know, I think Elena and I had certainly noticed this with Kidnap Road. The audiences makes up the journey. And I would never purport to know what an audience is going to get out of this play. And in this case, I would say, because this is about a real person who is in fact with us, by that I mean on the planet, that I invite audiences to come and see what this story of circumstances is and find their own message.
I love that idea. Elena, what about you as the director? Is there a message or thought that you'd like audiences to take away?
Well, when I first experienced the play, both as reading it, but then hearing it, and the amazing thing about Kat's work to say too, is that reading her plays, you might go, oh my gosh, this is so big. And then you hear it and it's like music. It's all very poetic and it's kind of like, it kind of seeps into your brain in very elusive ways. And you can't always tell exactly how it's affected you so emotionally, but it does. And there are questions that I think that come out for me in the play that continue to excite me. And one of those questions is, how as a country, and in this case, you know, we're talking about Argentina, but it, when I hear it, I'm also hearing it as an American. How as a country do we heal the past? How as a country do we ever forgive? Should we? Can we forgive? If we can never forget, can we forgive? And how do we move forward? How do we speak up when we've been told to be silent? Should we speak up? Are we unsafe if we speak up? So all of these questions, like Paola just suggested, to me are about what it means to live in our country, and to do this in New York City right now is very, very exciting. And I think that there's a lot to be learned from both the character of Claudia and Bernardi, but also learning about how Argentina is continuing to wrestle with a really problematic past.
Love those ideas. My final question for this first part, I'm going to ask to you, Paola, and that is, who do you hope have access to How to Eat an Orange?
Oh, I hope as many people as we can share this with. I think we are in a state of emergency in this country, whether we like to admit it or not. And again, if anything resonates about this play with an audience member in a way that will awaken a desire to get involved and to have their voices heard, I feel like that's just something to look forward to.
That is a lovely answer. I love that. Catherine, Elena, anything you'd like to add to that?
You know, the amazing thing about Claudia Bernardi as well is that she is an amazing visual artist. And so it's so inspiring to see someone make stunningly beautiful pieces of work. Sometimes she makes them as an individual artist, and sometimes she does these peace-building missions in places all around the world that have seen intense conflict, where she works with children from both sides of the political conflict to create art together. And even though the play isn't necessarily about the art making, there's something so inspiring for somebody to say, I've been there. I know what it's like. I know how scary it can be. I know how it's very easy to point at an enemy and say, they're not me. And so there's something really inspirational in this character of Claudia that I think people can really be inspired by, in the same way that every time I talk to her, I'm very inspired. I think, wow, you do so much to just bring peace and optimism and forward thinking and light to this world. And it invigorates me to go back into rehearsal and find some of that too.
Yeah. And Andrew, I was just going to say, you were mentioning money earlier. One of the remarkable things about La Mama, and it is one of my theater homes, is that the tickets are extraordinarily inexpensive, and that we hope, of course, that people will come from a variety of places, and that they will be encouraged by the price of the ticket.
For the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would love to start with our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites? And Paola, can I start with you on that?
Ooh, yes. Tony Kushner certainly inspires me as a novelist, Isabel Allende. And of course, I am totally into magical realism. So Gabriel Garcia Marquez is a big inspiration. Borges, I think those are my, I am looking for more women in this question. And Catherine now, of course, Migdalia Cruz, Maria Irene Fornes, big, big inspiration.
Those are some wonderful names. I love that. Thank you for sharing those. Catherine, how about you? What or who inspires you?
Yeah, so I was going to mention Migdalia Cruz as well, who I did see the production Bernarda Alba that Paola and Mercedes were in a very long time ago. And also wanted to say that I saw Elena's production of my Maria Irene Fornes's Mud, which was a very beautiful production, as Elena's productions always are. Jackie by Elfrida Jelinek is an amazing one-person show, as is The Testament of Mary by Colm Tubin. And I was a huge fan of Downstate by Bruce Norris, and just had the pleasure of seeing my friend Kia Corthran's last two shows, one at Arena and one at the Keen Company.
I can tell we're all going to have a really amazing project because we have a lot of the same inspirations. And Paola, yes, everybody you said, Borges, Marquez, of course, Tony Kushner. And I would add, and of course, Fornes, of course, Migdalia Cruz, absolutely. And I would add Jose Rivera, who is the whole reason why I'm in theater, just seeing his plays. And I would also add that for me, I'm very inspired by visual art. I believe that so much of my work as a director is creating a piece of stunning visual art. And so I really love going to museums and spending a lot of time in magical, realistic worlds and seeing shapes and space in new ways. And of course, I love working with Kat, and I love any writer that gives me a puzzle that I need to figure out where all the work isn't done for me on the page.
Those are all wonderful inspirations. Some of our favorite and near and dear playwrights as well. So that is so lovely. Thank you for all that. And it leads to my next question, which is, what is your favorite part about working in the theater? And Elena, we can stick with you first on that, please.
I love that it takes a community to make a piece of art, which of course, you know, is also helpful because where your expertise fails, someone else's expertise or imagination can help. But to me, we are creating the worlds that we want to see out in the world, that we're creating in a rehearsal room or on stage together. We're solving problems together. We're doing so with forward thinking and with eyes on the prize. And so I wish that more of the world could work that way, where we could get things done. Theater people are good at getting things done. And, you know, I just love putting in something in front of an audience. To me, I'm a faculty member at Princeton and I teach theater at Princeton. And I'm always saying to my students that the audience is the final scene partner. They're the ones that we now collaborate with. And so we've done all this work and we invite them in and we want their voice to be in the room with us, and we will respond to them and they'll respond to us. And that moment of opening the curtain and inviting the audience is to me the most exciting thing.
That is a lovely answer. I absolutely love that. Thank you for sharing that. Catherine, going back to you on this question, what's your favorite part about working in the theater?
Well, I love playwriting, and I have to say that long ago when I first was at NYU in dramatic writing, there was a teacher that taught us structure, and it was just like a weekend structure class with Mylan Stitt, And he said that, you know, and these were the days when people smoked. So he was smoking and the ash was getting longer and longer, and we were all looking. And he said, you know, the people that are going to be in playwriting for the long haul are not the people that want to be playwrights, but the people who need to be playwrights. And I have really had the great privilege of being a playwright for 30 years now. And theater really has saved my life in many ways. And I love the combination of being able to be alone and in the driver's seat. I mean, I've written for Lifetime TV in Hollywood, and I was far from in the driver's seat. And but then it's not solitary. It's very collaborative. And I love the theater. And after the pandemic, you know, I had heard for all those years, oh, the theater's so amazing, you know, it can do something. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it, you know, or whatever. But then going back to it, I when I was in the room, I just realized how truly profound it is to be in a room every time different.
I love that. Yes. Paola, what about you? What is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Well, a lot of it has been said already, so I'm not going to repeat it, but certainly the collaborative aspect of it, and also the power of storytelling in real time. I mean, there's nothing like it. It's when that communication with the audience, where like there's not a pin drop, you know, it's magical. And the communities that get formed with every project that sometimes are lasting communities, where you can, you know, it's like you do a play and you have all these little pockets of people that become your family for a period of time that then you stay in touch or not, but usually you do. And that to me is invaluable, because those communities carry you on when you're low, when you're high, when you're, you know, they kind of, you know, we share everything. And that, I think that's really priceless. And also the whole thing that it's just bigger than us, you know, like once the story is running and it's you get on the train and you don't get off, and it's just become something else. You're just a channeling tool for the words of the playwright and the vision of the director. And you're just along for the ride, giving it your all and connecting with the ensemble and with the audience and just leaving your gut there, ideally, you know, in every play, whether it's a comedy, whether it's a drama, whether it's both. So there's nothing like it. It's my favorite. It's my favorite medium, actually.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Again, wonderful thoughts from all three of you. This is absolutely fantastic. And now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Okay. So I mentioned earlier that one of my inspirations is Jose Rivera. And I did tell him this, I think, when I finally had the opportunity to work with him. But I was young and still in school, in grade school, high school. And I went to see, on a field trip with our whole class, Marisol, his play Marisol. And it was at Hartford Stage in Hartford, Connecticut. And I was sitting pretty high up, you know, it's a really raked stage. So you're really looking down on the stage. And I was sitting pretty high up next to my friend, another real theater lover. And the end of act one had finished. And it goes to blackout. And I reached over to my friend, grabbed his arm as hard as I could, and held onto it, like my fingers in his arm. And the entire place was holding its breath. And this is, you know, a bunch of school kids. This is like a school kid matinee. And, you know, like as soon as the lights go off, everyone's like throwing stuff and kicking each other and making out, whatever they're doing, right? Everyone could not believe what they had just seen happen. And they all went, and it took forever for everyone to breathe again. And it was, everybody talks about in the theater, you know, everyone's heartbeat is in line and everyone's breathing together. And I have never had that experience. I had never certainly had that experience before. And I don't know if I've had an experience like that since. And I'll never forget it. That feeling of my heart is in my throat. I can't believe that this person wrote this and I'm seeing what just happened. And that I was so physiologically affected. And that from then on, I knew I needed to be a theater artist. And I've been maybe trying to like chase that. I chase that moment with every show I go to, with every piece I read. And it's just this fun, lifelong pursuit.
Wow,
what a memory. Thank you so much for sharing that. Who would like to go next?
I have so many favorite moments, but the one that pops out right now, I was in a play by another of my favorite playwrights, Edwin Sanchez.
Oh, yes.
A play called Clean. In this play, my character, who is a seamstress, falls in love with a man that likes to cross-dress and has asked me to create a wedding dress for him, her. And there is like a lot of, you know, comings and goings, but finally the dress is standing there majestically and it's beautiful. There was a lot of controversy surrounding this play because we did it in the early 90s. It was before the LGBTQ community got the rights that they deserved, certainly some of them. And we had a mixed audience with a very diverse group of people. And in one point of the play, one of my sons goes rogue and comes and slashes the wedding dress that I've been working so hard to make. And the whole audience, regardless of where they stood on issues or whatever, everybody went, no! I mean, we literally had to hold until people kind of calmed down from that, you know, kind of slightly traumatic moment where like all of the dreams, everything that was poured into the making of that dress, which meant a lot more than what I'm just saying, obviously, everybody unified. And I will never forget that. The power of the story and the power of making division seem silly and how everybody was together and like, please do not destroy that dress, you know? So yeah, that ranks up there with one of my favorite moments, yes.
That is such an incredible moment. Thank you so much for sharing that. That. Catherine, bring us home on this. What is your favorite theater
Yes,
movie?
Yes, I'm so enjoying listening to these stories. Yes, so one of the things that I've written about a lot is genocide. And I have a play called Lemkin's House, which is about Raphael Lemkin. And he's a soulmate of mine. He invented the word genocide himself, and then he created the Genocide Convention. And in the play, at the very, very end of the play, Lemkin, the character who's been trapped in the afterlife, has the moment where his mother finally says, you can come with me. And what was really wonderful about that memory is that the director and I really worked to figure out how we were going to end the play. And I think this really ties into what everybody's talking about, this idea of giving it up to the audience. And when Lemkin finally leaves the stage, that is a memory that I will always hold. And then similarly in an opera that Him Sopi, the Cambodian composer, composed, I wrote the libretto for, at the very end of the show, the lead's character, Michael Kaylee is the actor the singer who sang it. And Mark Dela Cruz played his best friend. And Mark is actually the first person who played Hamilton, who was the first Asian Hamilton on Broadway. And Mark is shot. And Mike, and he's dead. And Mike is holding him and then proceeds to sing a song. And that is a pretty amazing memory as well for me.
That is so wonderful. What fantastic memories you all shared. Thank you so much for all of those. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do any of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
I have a few, but I have one which is called Sugar Skull, which is a Dia de Muertos musical, and it's for family audiences. It works with an Indigenous dance and music team and also a non-Indigenous dance and music team from Mexico. And it's stunning and beautiful and fun and funny. And we go all around the country every year, 30 cities, 30 different cities every year. And it happens in the fall between October and November, getting ready for Dia de Muertos. And yeah, it's super fun. And I'm so proud of it. We've had it on the road now for about 5 years. And we also did a virtual tour during the pandemic.
Where do you get the schedule for that, Elena?
It'll be published probably in August, September. But Mexico Beyond Mariachi is the name of the company. And okay. But it's put out, you know, a commercial producer, and it's called Sugar Skull.
Wonderful. Wow.
That's amazing. Yes.
I'm not sure if the podcast will air in time for this, but I have a couple of scenes in a movie that is kind of like a noir thriller, fun adventure called Stockade that Eric McGinty wrote and directed. And it's going to have the premiere, the New York premiere at the Museum of Moving Image, April 27th at 5 o'clock. And for tickets, if you go on the website of the Museum of Moving Image, that's how you can get them. But it's a story about an immigrant woman who is trying to stay in this country and all the things that she has to do to be able to do so, or the things around her that tempt her to be able to tempt her to do things that maybe are not so kosher, but she wants to stay in the country. But it's the immigrant struggle, really. And the cast is hugely diverse. I mean, we have Iranian, Lebanese, Argentinian, Puerto Rican, Asian, I think it's Korean. We have Chinese. We have incredible cultural mix in the movie, and it's very exciting.
Wow, I want to see it.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Catherine, anything for you?
Yeah, I have a musical that's opening off Broadway, which opens on November 26th at the York Theater. And the composer is not only I'm a huge fan, but a good friend, Jimmy Roberts, who wrote I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. So.
Oh, beautiful. Some great things that we've got to keep tabs on. And that is a lovely lead into my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about how to eat an orange or about any of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Well, for La Mama, the show, simply going to La Mama, how to eat an orange, would find anything you need there. And for me, I have a website, which is simply my name, where you can find me.
You can also find me at my website, which is elenaaraoz.com, ElenaAraoz. My email address is there. And yeah, love to talk.
For me also, my website, paulabizzi.com. And yes, if you want to connect, I'm all in.
Lovely. Well, Catherine, Elena, and Paula, thank you all so much for taking the time to speak with me today and for sharing this fantastic and truly timely piece with us. This has been such a lovely conversation. So thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. And of course, you can also find any of us at the theater too. Yeah. So come by and find us after the show.
That is a perfect place to meet you, right? Yeah. My guests today have been the playwright Catherine Fiu, the director Elena Araroz, and the performer Paula Pizzi, who are all part of the show How to Eat an Orange, which is playing May 30th through June 16th at La Mama Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting lamama.org. And we also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you come out for this brilliant work. The weather is going to be lovely the end of May, early June, and that makes it perfect to stroll on down to that lovely Lower East Side and head to La Mama Theater, a beautiful complex, and see this beautiful work, How to Eat an Orange, happening May 30th through June 16th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones,
unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.